Welcome, everyone. If you are out in the universe watching this via video, via our blog, please join us. Tweet to the hashtag CTFuture and let us know how you're doing. Let us know what's going on in your world and what's awesome, and hop into the conversation. I am Hilde Gottlieb with Creating the Future, and let's do a go around and see. Please introduce yourself, tell us where you are, and something that is awesome in your life these days. So I will just randomly choose Angie Eikenberry. Where are you right now, and what's awesome?
Hi, everyone. I'm right now in College Park, Maryland. My daughter qualified to represent Nebraska at the National History Day. So that's what's awesome too. It's pretty exciting to be here with 3,000 other middle school and high school students doing history, like talking about history. How cool could that be? Anything, wow. It can't be any cooler than that. So that's what we're doing the next few days. We have a tour of the Capitol tomorrow, and we're gonna have breakfast with our members of Congress on Wednesday. And, you know, tour around, so pretty great.
Wow. For those of you out there who don't know, while we are on separate screens, Dimitri and I are right next to each other, so if we just sort of like, yeah, it's the magic. That is so awesome, Angie. How did she qualify? What was the process?
So there are different categories that you submit. Historical project, she did a research paper on the women of Dagenham who struck in Dagenham, England, that led to the Equal Pay Act for women in the UK, 1970. So she did a research paper, but students also do performances and documentaries and websites and others. So there's lots of multimedia talking about history. Ken Burns kicked it off yesterday. That was pretty cool. We got to hear him speak. And he talked a little bit about his new documentary that's going to be out in Vietnam in September. So that's pretty cool.
That's awesome. That's just wow. Good for her. Good for you.
Yeah, I'm very proud of her.
Who else? Let's let everybody else just sort of pop in as you go. Introduce yourself and tell us where you are and what's awesome with you.
Well, I'll jump in. So Angie's in my backyard right now. So I'm Justin Pollock. I am in Washington, D.C. Sorry we made it so hot for you.
It is really hot here.
It's very hot. So my awesome actually is while I grew up on the West Coast and still am very much a West Coast person, it is pretty cool being able to live in Washington, D.C. and have my kids do things that are just truly awesome. So my 10-year-old daughter, who's in fourth grade, within the first week of starting fourth grade, her whole class, which was 130 kids or in her grade, went down to the Lincoln Memorial and got on the steps at a podium on the spot where Martin Luther King spoke. And every one of them talked about their hopes and dreams for fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And today we went down to the other end of the reflecting pool to the Washington Monument. So we all trekked down there, again, all 130 of them, and they shared their reflections on fourth grade and what they had walked away with and what they had learned. So just pretty amazing that A, they're doing that just in and of itself, and B, they get to do it in some pretty awesome historical places. So
I got chills when you said that. It's just amazing. Wow. Rebecca, how about you?
Hi, Rebecca Hurd. I'm beaming in from Idaho, and today I'm beaming in from Boise from my father's office. It's the location du jour. And my awesome is summer nights and the fact that it's still light till about 10 o'clock plus out here. And then you add a full moon on top of that. And that also means you can do mountain bike rides at 8 o'clock at night. So cultivating my passion and moving from road biking to mountain biking with my husband. And we have many adventures ahead of us and a few under our belt already.
Wonderful.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. And Mark Riffey, it's a pleasure to see you. Tell us where you are and what's been
I'm still in Missoula, Montana, so I'm out west where Rebecca is, sort of, at least. And I've had all kinds of awesome lately, but I think probably the closest thing to awesome for me is that my youngest son finished his first year at Gonzaga Law and got an internship in the public defender's office. So he will have a really non-boring summer. And my oldest son went back to school last fall, and he is working this summer at a company that creates nanotechnology medical stuff. That's about as technical as I can get about that. But it's cool to have two sons in their 20s who are doing the things that they want to do and showing what they, you know, what's important to them and that kind of stuff. It's fun to watch that kind of thing.
Yeah, it really is. How fun.
Mark, yep. we can talk about having a nano understanding of nanotechnology. You and me.
Yes, that much.
That's great. Well, I'll go next. I am Dimitri Petropoulos. I am like right next to that person over there. And in Tucson, Arizona. It is actually a cooler couple of days here. I mean, cooler means like it didn't get in the hundreds, you know, so wow, it's really cool. And it was actually in the high 60s, I think, this morning, which is a very cool morning for this time of year. So that's awesome. My awesome takes Justin's awesome and fast forwards 20 years. I got a phone call from my youngest, who is 30, yesterday, and he called to thank me. And the thing was for teaching him how to change a tire and how to negotiate with people in an environment. He was in a parking garage and he had a flat tire and he had to work around all the people and whatever. He knew what to do. And he knew how to talk to them. He knew how to negotiate with the parking attendant, whatever. So he just said, thank you, Dad. I just want to thank you for teaching me how to do all that stuff. So that was my awesome a few years into the future, Justin, that you can look forward to. Getting a thank you from your fourth grader, your future 30-year-old.
Yep. And I'll encourage anybody who may be watching to please, again, tweet to the hashtag CTFuture and tell us what's awesome in your world. My world, the theme of kids seems to be home and family and seems to be prevalent today. My daughter spent 3 weeks traveling around Ireland, London, and then ended the trip with 5 days in Iceland. And I got to live vicariously through her travels across Western Ireland, hiking in the Aran Islands. Got to live vicariously through her and Dimitri's youngest, spending Derek's birthday in London for 5 days. Then got to live vicariously through her being in Iceland. She was home for a week, and now I'm sort of watching the phone to see if it buzzes because she was home for 5 days. She's now working for Spotify, which is a Swedish company, which I didn't realize, and for training and orientation and company-wide meetings, they flew her to Sweden. So she arrived back in LA on Saturday the 3rd, and this past Saturday, the 10th, she flew back to Sweden. And so I'm just sort of watching and living again vicariously through Lizzie's pictures that she's sending me, which is pretty fun. And watching all that she's doing. It really is fun watching them become who they get to become. It's just, yeah, it's really quite awesome. So, and it's been really, really awesome. I have to share with you guys how awesome it was to reflect on what we're going to talk about today and to listen to 2 years of board meetings and see the themes that we keep coming back to over and over again, and the fact that we're living what we're going to talk about today, that it was an amazing, really very awesome to be able to look at that document and say, this isn't a document of what we aspire to. This is a document of what we are right now, at least to the best of, that anybody can be. Because this is a practice, not a perfect. But this is that really felt very, very awesome to be able to look around and see what we're building. So I thought today, to ease into the conversation, I would just give a little bit of easing in, a little bit of background for anybody who may be watching. And Dimitri, I'm assuming that you're watching Twitter. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Creating the Future is a collection of people all around the world who are supporting each other in a grand experiment. And that experiment is both simple and immensely complex, which is in 10 years' time to see how much more humane the world could be if all of the human systems that we're so used to, both in our culture and our workplaces, were guided by principles that brought out the best in us, rather than, in so many cases, even inadvertently reacting to the worst in us. So what could the world look like in 10 years' time if we infused those systems with the principles and the ways of being and the questions that bring out the best in us? We do that through first learning, and a lot of what, if you have watched these meetings, you know we spend a lot of time learning, a lot of time asking. Justin, you love the word inquiry, and you're right, that's what we're about, that whole inquiry at the depths of learning, learning what things look like in action, learning, just sort of exploring in the mind, and then taking what we learn and pushing that out into the world. And we do that by education, we do that by bringing people together, we do that by demonstration projects, sharing stories of what's possible. I see Carl is trying to get online, which would be wonderful. Welcome, Carl. Let me just wait for a moment to bring Carl into the room here. Are you there? Can you hear us? He's struggling. Can you hear Susan?
One minute. Sorry, can you hear me?
We can indeed. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm really sorry about that. That wasn't stressful remotely. it turned out that the link went to my spam filter. So,
oh, no. Well, you found us.
Yeah, sorry about that.
You found us. It is wonderful to have you here. Just giving a little bit of background about where we've come from and where we're at, and who we are. The first phase of Creating the Future's work really has been, over the past several years, building the programs that will accomplish our mission, building all of the stuff, building convening programs, building education programs. The next phase is where we get to say, if this is a 10-year experiment to see what this looks like, if it is ubiquitous, what will it take to make it ubiquitous? And what will it take to make the ripples that will create that? One thing that we know for sure is that a standard hierarchical organization that has a board and a CEO and a staff, no matter how big they are, cannot create the ripples that we want to create. And so the very, very first step in our creating those ripples is completing what we've been talking about for the past 2 years, a restructuring of how this organization functions so that we are a networked platform that people can plug into where it makes sense for them, in work that's meaningful to them, in ways that are meaningful to them, and in that way create those ripples as much as possible. And the first step in that, if decision-making is going to be local like that, is to say at the root of everything that's going on throughout all of that needs to be our code of values. And most importantly, what do those values look like in the day-to-day? What will they look like? How will we know? So that's sort of the journey of what has brought us here. It has been a remarkable journey over the past several years. This is the most, I have to say, as a organizational geek and as a leadership geek, this is the most exciting thing I've ever played with, to see what it takes to create the kind of structure that can create those ripples. There are many people who have been treading this path ahead of us. I'm really eager to learn from them. But again, what we learn consistently is the values are at the core of all of that. So with that, let's start out by just sort of getting ourselves grounded using catalytic thinking, which is the framework that we use for everything that starts us, instead of reacting to what's wrong, brings us up to what's possible and then creates the conditions for that. Let's just spend a little bit of time grounding ourselves in what having a statement of our values in action, what does that make possible, both for us as an experiment and for the people who encounter us? What does it make possible to have not just a code of values, but a description of what that looks like in action?
Okay, I'll jump in. I think what it makes possible to have these is that we can ensure that we're all on the same page, going in the same direction, and then it allows other people to see what we're about and be able to know where and how they can fit in or how we can collaborate.
Yeah. Both for us and for them, and an interesting definition of us as we shift.
Yes, yeah.
Carl, you're muted. Can we unmute Carl Dimitri?
Yeah, let me see if I can do that. Carl, okay.
There you go. You were muted that whole time, and you looked darling, but... no, you... Okay, hang on. There we go.
Shoot, I'm unmuting him. And,
okay, Dimitri keeps on muting you. You keep muting yourself. One of you stop. There.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Repeat everything you said that was obviously brilliant.
Can you hear me? Sorry. Yeah, okay. I'm clearly having one of those days. If you look at corporates that are listed on a stock exchange, and you look at the tangible value of their assets, and then you look at the valuation of that organization on the stock exchange, you'll find that there's a huge difference between them, because increasingly the value of corporates is intangible. It's their brand. And for me, our values are almost like our brand. That's where most of the value of what we do actually is. It's probably not in a website that we build, sort of something like that. It's those values that they're a significant determinant. And when people see that value, it is something that they will want to work with.
You should feel fortunate, Carl, that you were not here at the very, very, very beginning of the meeting, because Angie and I were talking about the fact that your job today is to please explain the UK to us.
Yeah, what the heck is going on?
Wouldn't we then have to explain the United States to him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, never mind.
Can't do it. Although I did hear the crossover, which yesterday was John Cleese trying to explain the United States to Britain. And yeah, it was, we just won't go there. I love the idea of our values are our brand. And the fact that there's a link there about not just our values, but our values in action. What do you guys feel about that in terms of the walking of the talk and the brand?
Well, I think most importantly is it sets the expectations. People know what they are likely to experience with something that is branded with or connected with creating the future. So I think, you know, and I think there is an opportunity to model the valued behaviors in a way that we would hope others would too. Because I think it is not uncommon for, I'm sure, many of us to come across entities where their values are not anything more than something written on a piece of paper. And in fact, you know, you go into a meeting where they're saying, they're yelling at each other about respect. And, you know, I mean, as obscene as that sounds. So I think, you know, that the what it makes possible is not only the depth of understanding that it gives someone walking in without having to do vast amounts of personal discovery through the experience that we live. They can have kind of a jump start on that. And that it serves as a model of what it actually looks like to have integrity, which is when the actions align with the words.
I know you spend a lot of time in the world of brands, Mark. How does this strike you?
Strikes me as having trouble finding the Zoom button. You know, the thing that I find that helps kind of tags onto what Justin said, and that is that when you have a set of values and people know that when they work with you, you actually stick to those values, then you introduce yourself in advance and you introduce anyone who joins that group or that's affiliated with that group, generally speaking, you introduce them in advance. So they don't have to wonder, you know, who am I going to deal with today? Are they going to be a pain? Are they going to be, you know, what kind of conversation am I going to have? What kind of work environment are we going to have? What kind of meeting are we going to have? What are we going to accomplish? If they know that those values are in place already and they've seen walking the talk from that organization, then that takes the stress level and the all the things that take us off topic and all the things that take us out of focus, all of those things just go away because we don't have to worry about, you know, who's the jerk on the other side of the webcam. That's me.
I am reminded of something that we talk about in our classes. And one of the things that, because we use this Zoom platform, and look at that, we've gone 20 minutes through a meeting and I haven't plugged Zoom. Zoom's awesome. But we use this Zoom platform for all of our classes, and Dimitri does a pre-class tech walkthrough with everybody who's going to be in the class. It's a one-on-one, it's a walking them through, and it is rooted in their feeling comfortable with the technology. It's not rooted in him teaching the technology, but them feeling comfortable in the technology. It's rooted in the people side of it. And when we use that as an example in the class of what it is to focus on the people, not the thing, we compare it to how did you feel? We will ask them, how did you feel when you went through the tech call with Dimitri? And many times they'll say, it wasn't really a tech call. It was a my being comfortable call. And they get it and they feel it. And we then ask them, to your point, Mark, how did you feel the last time you called your cable company? And just comparing those two. And you're right, you know, I call the cable company or I call tech support for my laptop that's not working. And I'm guaranteed to feel like an idiot. And I gird myself for that. And we say things like, yeah, I don't have the strength to call the cable company today. So I appreciate what you're saying, Mark. Anything else that you guys feel that it makes possible?
Well, I think tied to the expectations, it's also and the why. Like, here's what you can expect and why. Like, because you're going to be hearing from humans. We're going to invest a lot of time in conversations, and the why points to the statement of values. And the more, I love what Mark said about introducing yourself in advance. And once we start the relationship, there'll be a comfort and familiarity that will come because it will be the rhythms and patterns and rituals of how we show up together with whoever the person is, whatever the situation is, that people then start to get in the swing of the, this is how we be together, creating the future.
I also think that it creates guideposts that as you're interacting and having conversations and doing things, walking the talk, as Mark said, when you come to a junction point, what do you do now? And I think the statement of values, you know, gives you, you know, do you go left, do you go right, which direction you're going to head in. And maybe in the current political environment, left and right isn't really the right terminology. Do you go up or do you go down, you know, whichever direction it is. But I think it's really helpful to have not only an advance knowing what you're coming into, but also kind of a roadmap of what's next when you enter unfamiliar territory.
On those points, values in this discussion are a bit like trust, and you will find all sorts of good quality academic literature that argues that trust is a necessary prerequisite for doing business. So values are the lubricant in the machine in this conversation. Dimitri's point, though, about in the current environment, about it's not left and right anymore, I think is also relevant in a slightly different way, if I may say, Dimitri, in that I've come across lots of analysis that argues that the new fissure in society that we face now is one of open versus closed. And for me, we are very, very on the open side of the divide, outward facing, open, transparent, and as a set of values being open and sort of looking like that, that's the sort of world that I want to live in. And I would immediately feel aligned to someone who shared those values with me.
Beautiful. Yeah, I was thinking about this too, that this era that we live in of where we can't really trust the facts or we don't know if they're real or not. So I mean, more and more that having some extreme transparency, we need extreme transparency basically, and to have that trust. And so what Carl was saying, and Dimitri, I think that's so important today. For better or for worse.
I'm just stuck on the degree to which we don't realize relationships start before we think they start. And I'm so struck, Mark, by your comment of introducing ourselves in advance, and then Rebecca, your words of that starts the relationship before we even have that interaction. There's something really powerful in, I guess that's what a brand is, but it just feels very, very powerful to know that you're introducing yourself from long before you think you're introducing mm-hmm. yourself mm-hmm. and that relationship is starting way, way, way before we think it happens. It's way before somebody picks up the phone or sends an email.
You know, I'm also thinking about, I'm in and I'll go back to the metaphor of being in a strange place, a strange land or whatever. So if I take the brand metaphor and I'm in somewhere in Japan and there's a McDonald's, not promoting McDonald's, but I pretty much know what to expect, or at least it's going to be familiar when I get there. Or whatever is brand related. And I think as creating the future as a worldwide phenomena, whatever this becomes and is, if I am entering and participating in a Creating the Future meeting, those values create that kind of environment, regardless of what the language is or where I'm at or what part of the world I'm in, there's going to be a sense of familiarity. So I could walk into that meeting and not be and feel comfortable, that it feels familiar, and that Angie, to your point, that I share that with everybody else. And part of that is transparency. Part of that is walking the talk. Part of, you know, all of the things that are in there. But I think looking at it through the lens of the future and looking at it through the lens of it could be anywhere, what is it that makes it Creating the Future?
So we've talked about trust, we've talked about open, we've talked about relationship. Are there other things that, as we look at the conditions that we're hoping this statement of values and action will create, are there other conditions people need to know and feel in order to feel that relationship, in order to feel that trust?
Well, I think there's accountability, and I think there are two sides to that. One is, there is a clear definition of what we are being accountable to. So I go back to the integrity, but I also think that the way in which they are presented and you have framed them, Hillary or Hildy, is that
we're going back to politics, aren't we?
It is the scaffolding that we also need to practice integrity. So we all want, those of us that want to have integrity, it's very, we look to those things. I had a real aha moment where I was working with a group and we were talking about how outcomes, values, and vision are the pillars of an organization. And we went through and we sort of said, well, how does that work? What role do they serve? And we had these flip charts with all the lists. And then we actually asked people to envision a scenario where they were like navigating the world as a representative of the organization. And what was so funny was when we asked them, like, well, what would your values tell you? They didn't have an instant answer. They kept looking back at the flip charts because we need that. We need the scaffolding that says, this is how you do it. Like, it's not always natural to behave the way our values indicate we should be behaving. And so having that clarity, it allows for accountability with support on what it takes to actually be accountable.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yes. I'm reminded, we were at a wonderful session this past Saturday. That could have been my awesome. We're very, very lucky here in Tucson that someone who has been a Zen teacher at a fairly high level, very, very seasoned, very experienced Zen teacher who teaches nationally, happens to live in Tucson and also happens to be retired from the University of Arizona, where he was a professor of behavioral psychology and venturing the link between psychology and neuroscience. And he was doing a one-day session on pretty much the neuroscience of how we walk the talk of moral integrity, and what are the brain triggers for that. It was mind-blowingly fascinating. And one of the exercises that he had us do was he had us break into groups of three and talk about what do each of us do to practice moral integrity. And the fascinating part about it, to get to what you were saying, Justin, was the number of people who, and they were there because they care. I mean, these are people for whom this is like a really big piece of their lives. The number of people who said, wow, I have absolutely no idea how to answer that. I have no idea what I do to keep in moral integrity. And then they would start telling stories that you knew they were walking that talk, but because they didn't have that scaffolding, it wasn't something that they could, they'd start to say, well, I learned from a really good teacher when I was in the Navy, or I am part of my church, and they'd start to sort of go into the where they might find that. But it was really interesting, to your point, Justin, that scaffolding is so important, because they were clearly there because they had an intention for moral integrity. They could not put it into words. What else do you guys think people need to know and feel to have that sense of trust and relationship and openness?
I want to add to Justin's comment about the scaffolding. I think you need practice. I think the reason they were looking up at the flip charts is because this was new. And as much as you believe it and want it and do it, you still need to basically create the pathways where it just becomes reflexive, as opposed to, you have to guide the ship, as opposed to autopilot takes you to that point.
I think there's also the normalizing to everyone about how things have been going, the like how relationships have been, the usual. This is not, I guess, business as usual. This is what we all want, yet this is how many of us, many people have not been in systems of any kind that people show up in this fashion.
You so often, Rebecca, talk about broken systems. So what people need to know is the understanding of why, when it feels good, it feels good, and why, when it feels bad, it feels bad. That we create a system to reinforce feeling bad. Interesting. What else do people need to know that this statement of values will create?
When you look at the caller ID of your phone, you make an instant decision whether or not to pick it up or not. Which of those people do you want to be?
I love having you here.
I'll always take your call, Mark.
Well, so along those lines, if they do decide to pick up the phone, that they feel like what people have to say is meaningful, that it will have an impact, that it's not just that people are being engaged for the sake of being engaged, but that it's authentic engagement, that they have a chance to have a say in how things happen.
Mm. Yes.
The fact that someone's actually calling you in the first place is a good sign. I'm serious. I mean, so much now we're trying to, it's one of my little pet hates at the moment. We're obsessed about digital and technology in nonprofits. And the latest wheeze that I am being sold is that we should incorporate chatbots into our process so that instead of humans talking to other humans, we can get computers to talk to humans instead because it's cheaper. I mean, this is bobbins. It's all, everything that we talk about, it's about human relationships. So there is a serious point, the fact that you're actually bothering to speak to someone.
Well, yeah, because that was going to be my next question is, so when they see the caller ID, they want to pick up the phone. What makes them want to pick up the phone? And to your point, Carl, the fact that somebody actually cares and is a human being. What else? What makes them want to pick up the phone?
Well, when I come back to the things that we're going to discuss shortly in terms of what's written down here, I think, first of all, a sense that that person can relate to you, that you have something in common. All the stuff that I'm reading at the moment about what influences people is that you might have come across an expression that has now gained some coverage in England, saying that the public have had enough of experts. Angie probably knows that one. And it's this idea that we're not prepared to trust professionals or facts anymore, and we're actually much more likely to believe something if it's said to us by someone who we feel is very similar to us. So the values sort of thing. So the second reason that I would pick up the phone, and again, we'll talk about this later, is that in thinking that that person is similar to us, they use a similar language to us. They seem to sort of share similar sort of values and ideals, as we've sort of said already. So I think there's a question we have to ask later on, Hildy, which is the language that we've got in here and the way that we use language, is that the language that people out there use? And then the last one, and I say this at the moment because I've spent the last week in the UK on Volunteers Week and thinking a lot about what is it that encourages people to give their time and get involved and so on. And the thing that we seem to have talked an awful lot about over the last week is that it's got to be fun. I mean, lots of what we do, it's very serious. It's too serious. Actually, and a lot of the reasons that we want to come together is, a bit like these board meetings. I've had some really good times in these board meetings, and it's one of the reasons that I stay involved. So there's got to be an element of fun, of lightheartedness on occasion in there. Mm. Mm-hmm.
There's that old saw about taking the issue seriously, but not taking ourselves seriously. Yeah.
And I can see that Dimitri is laughing in the background at me, so he's not taking me seriously. So that's clearly the sort of fun that we want, Dimitri.
I'm talking to my bot. You know, we have a relationship. We're going. Yeah, my bot understands me, you know, when I ask a question.
As long as you're not talking to your bot, I think we're okay. What else would make people want to pick up the phone? What would they need to feel or know in order to want to pick up that phone?
I go back to something that Angie said about authentic engagement. And I think, you know, core to that is that people are affecting change that they care about. Again, I think it speaks a little bit more towards what the values look like and what they touch on. But if there isn't clarity of you're here to create the future, to change the future, to create benefit, things that are of benefit to you and tap your passions, there is, you know, beyond just the relationship piece, there is the outcomes piece of, yeah, I call because I want to make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. And this is a space where A, it feels better, and B, it gets to better.
Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning, and it links to what Carl was saying about the volunteer piece as well, that so often people, let me reframe that. What we're really about is giving people a path to activating their ability to make a difference right where they are, because so often, and I really was thinking about the volunteer piece, Carl, so you triggered that. So often we don't take action because we don't think it's going to make a difference. So you know, okay, yeah, okay, I volunteered one day. Really, did that make any difference? I've got my job. I got to feed my family. I got whatever. Yes, I could do X. I could go to the food bank. I could do whatever. But is that really making the difference that I really, because what I want to make is a big difference. And so I'm really sensing that connection between the stuff that you guys are talking about in that, it's some of the stuff that resonates with people when they get, the more they, this touches them is, oh, wow. Okay. So just in my day-to-day life, I'm actually creating change and seeing that. We can keep coming back to this question of what needs to be in place as we start diving into the document itself. So why don't we start doing that? Is there anything going on in the Twitterverse a little bit?
No, I just want to say hi to Mary Schaefer, who early on said hello, that she was joining the meeting through Susan Detweiler.
Oh, wonderful.
So I want to make sure that we say hello to her. But other than that, it's relatively quiet right now.
Relatively quiet. Cool. I'm grateful to you guys for looking this over. I know it was big. And what we're doing is big. Let's talk about the conditions that we said need to be in place and talk about what in the document does that, what in the document could do that better, what's there, what's missing. Just you guys go. I will confess I have no idea where to start this. So just looking at the conditions we said need to be in place, Carl, you said some things about language, the ability for people to relate to stuff, et cetera, a sense of trust, a sense of relationship, a sense of openness. To what extent is this document creating that? To what extent could it do better in what places?
So Hildy, just to start, I've got two documents in front of me, the background statement and then the values as a verb statement. Do you want me to start with either one or?
The background can be clarified, absolutely, yes. And I'm really excited to talk more about if there needs to be more background. Why don't I just say yes? Go.
Okay, so of the two documents, I preferred the values as a verb, the statement of values of action. I preferred that to the background one because the language in there felt a bit more human. I've been really obsessed over the last couple of years because of work I've been involved in here with trying to think about how can we talk to people in language that they themselves use. So the equivalent conversation that I have with my colleagues all the time is, what would your mum or your dad or a relative who's got nothing to do with the nonprofit sector at all, or community action or something like that, that just does things. Yeah. What language would they use? And we find ourselves quite frequently standing back from documents and striking out jargon from them. So the equivalent almost for you is, I mean, if someone from Texas who had nothing to do with what we normally do, would they read this and would they understand it? And I think the statement of our values in action is better, but some of the stuff in the background document, it doesn't feel human enough. So for example, just looking at the front page, at the bottom where it talks about research, development and experiment, where it talks about cultural systems, yeah? I know you know what that means, and I think I could make a stab at what I think that means, but I just don't think it's language that anyone outside would use. So if you want to make the biggest difference with what we've got, I think we have to declutter this a bit and remove some of that sort of slightly internal type language that we use. I think as Mark might have said underneath, I think my other sort of observation across both the documents after is that they feel quite repetitive. And
Mark said the same thing.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I sort of, maybe I'm just too used to being in a world where if it doesn't fit on two sides of A4, I can't convince somebody to read it.
That's right. Can I jump in to say that, on the one hand, I have a good point. On the other hand, to be extremely transparent, show our processes, you need, it's going to have to be some redundancy. There's going to have to be some of this where people have to wade through, or I don't know, or maybe there's a way that you have the final document and then if people want more, they go and look for it. But, you can't, I think part of the issue that we're facing in the world in general is that we're trying to get everything down to a soundbite all the time, and it ends up then that we can't trust the soundbite anymore. Or what's happening. So we need to, somehow have a balance, I guess. Go on, Carl, sorry.
That's a fair point, Angie. And whereas what you're thinking about is the world that we need to get to, whereas I'm sort of thinking about the world that we're in.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
Well, and there's nothing to say, let me reframe that. There's every reason that we can have another document. We can have the summary document that gives you the bullet points and that then goes into what does that really look like?
Yeah.
Well, and that's part of meeting people where they are.
Yep.
If I could just make one other reflection on the background document where we in the next to the last page, or what is for me for the next to the last page, and the section that begins values in words, where you talk about you'd looked at the meetings over the last 5 years, and that was all fine in terms of that list. I mean, compassion, equity, gratitude, and so on. But I guess I was a little bit surprised that there wasn't more there about outcome and making a difference, and about being user-centered. I think it's implicit in everything that we do. I just guess I was a bit surprised that it didn't more explicitly come out in the language, because, the thing that I always complain about at board meetings is that I think we have really good conversations that I enjoy, but ultimately, I mean, what's changed? What's making a difference? And I think the idea that ultimately, I mean, things have got to change. Yeah, I was surprised it didn't come out in those words.
And it can.
Yeah, and I guess I would echo that. And I think that was part of where perhaps I was walking towards with the authentic engagement. I think that, you know, some clarity around, yeah, is there a value-based outcome that we are claiming that is, you know, that notion of community benefit, that notion of being, you know, I think that the relationship component is obviously vitally important. And I think we get the relationship, we get the process, and maybe it's just a question of the explicitness of that outcomes piece, because I agree with Carl. I think it's implied that sort of it'd be hard to read this without taking that next step. But that's me in, you know, three of those years of board meetings where that's an assumption. That's an assumption I'm working with, is that we are pointing towards that. And
talk more, Justin, Carl, anybody, about what that could look like in our day-to-day actions. Given the framing that this is our values in action, talk more about that. That we're keeping an eye on what's possible, that we're always aiming for what's possible. Is that enough? Is that where you guys are going?
If one wanted to be cynical, Hilde, one would say there's an awful lot of values and not much action. The values absolutely underpin what we should do, but I guess ultimately, if we're going to prove to a skeptical world that this way of thinking is useful and worth spending time on, because it requires you to spend a lot of time on this, I just wonder if it's not clear enough that actually outcomes are ultimately what we are all about.
Okay, and now are we talking about saying we're about outcomes? Are we talking about defining the outcome? And where the writer is working here. What you're watching here is the writer trying to find the stuff and pull this together. Justin?
So, you know, we have the word, you know, we're creating and maintaining the conditions for accomplishing together. And I think the answer is accomplishing what together? So I think it is, you know, and again, I speak, this is sort of my perspective, is I'm here because I want to see a world where we are taking action to create more equitable systems, to have, you know, better health for everyone, to, you know, a lot of those things about a thriving community. So I'm wondering if some of that is just that language in there of, you know, accomplishing a thriving community together, because that's kind of why we're here.
So here's where I had inserted that, and it's obviously not clear enough. That at the beginning of each of these statements of our values in action, I'm looking at the one on relationships, at creating the future, we will create and actively maintain conditions that bring out the best in people as our contribution to the humane world we want to see.
So my response to that, Hilde, and it's a bit like the on the background paper where it begins, creating the future is a collection of people around the world supporting each other in a grand experiment to create a more humane world. I'm here because, I mean, broadly speaking, I think I understand that and what that means, but it's in some respects, it's quite intangible. And I come back to the sort of the person, I mean, who lives, you know, I mean, somewhere in the US that, you know, is not part of what we do. And that would feel very global to them. It would feel very intangible. Whereas I think if we had language that was a bit more, actually, as a result of sort of engaging in relationships, you know, I mean, where I live will be a better place. I think we've got to try and just ground it a bit more in the reality of people's lives.
Give me the language, kids. Give me the language. That's what we're here for.
Okay, so in the stuff that I've just been doing for the work that we did in Britain's election that you sort of talked about before, where we tried to use language that basically said the services that we use are better because nonprofits and volunteers are involved in them. We just believe that services are better when volunteers are involved in them. It's that simple. And the equivalent here is that we think communities are better when people take a stake and they do stuff in their community. For me, it's that simple.
Okay, now define better.
I wouldn't define better. I would
that's
quite deliberately
get stuck.
And sorry?
That's where we get stuck, is the question then becomes better for whom and better than what? And what we've said in our values is that better is more compassionate, more humane, all of that list of values that we said we were about, more joyful, more humane, more kind, more compassionate. Those are the list of things that we said we're about. And so, again, when we use words that aren't clearly defined like better, the question becomes, well, I think it's better if all those people on that side of town, And so we're very clear in our values about what better means. The question then becomes, being more explicit in this document about what that outcome looks like. And we can play with that. We can play with that. That's, I don't want us to get stuck in the wordsmithing, but I think playing with if what is there right now as our contribution to the humane world we want to see doesn't work, let's play together on what will work, that is more explicit about what we mean.
So I was thinking about this in relation to, in particular, the mission statement that's in the background. When I was thinking about human systems, that's a lot, that's big, right? there's a lot of things that Carl was talking about, and it seems to me a lot of what we do through creating the future is more, I think, organizational or relationship, right, based. It's not just the system ultimately is hopefully going to be changed, right? But where we really start at the level of the person and the person's connection to another person and the organization. And maybe there's a way to not play with that, to have a way to use language that people can grasp and connect on.
Just sort of coming back again, at the risk of sort of heresy, I read a book that I think you guys know quite well called The Abundant Community. I didn't actually enjoy it that much. That's the heresy bit, but that's for another time. But I think what they did reasonably well is that they used very simple examples. They used very simple language about why a set of values that they believed in, they think, lead to better outcomes in their community. So they talked about how people look after each other, that the act of giving becomes sort of central across that community. And it struck me that it was in language that was not aimed at us. It was aimed at sort of people out there. And I think that's what I'm searching for.
Anything else that struck you guys in terms of creating the conditions that we wanted to create? And I am struggling to find, I printed out Mark Riffey's comment and cannot find it. Because Mark, you had a note at the blog.
Do you want me to print out?
No, I just found it.
Okay.
I just found it. Having to scroll to it. Hmm.
I guess for me,
Mark's comment was about that it is not just the questions that we ask and the order in which we ask it, but the language that we use as well. So interesting that we are talking about language, but the language that's embedded in those questions. So I just wanted to acknowledge, Mark, I agree with you and was playing with changing that specifically to we'll be mindful that the language we use, the questions we ask, and the order in which we ask them matters. So just in that very small area. Anything else that struck you guys? I am smiling as you guys talk about the balance between long and deep and explicit and having a shorter version. You guys know that old Mark Twain joke about how he got sent a telegram saying need 2,000 words in 2 days, and the telegram they got back was can't do 2,000 words 2 days, can do 20,000 words 2 days, 2,000 words will take 3 weeks. I was like so proud of myself that I chopped it down to what it is.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, you did a good job. It is really hard to do that, but yeah, very, very hard. And somehow, though, I think thinking about how, you know, start where people are at, but how can we move them to a place where we're not just.
You broke up a little bit. Could you repeat that?
How do we start where people are at, but also move them along so that we aren't always having to speak in sound bites?
Yeah, I think it's a yes and. I'm really sensing it's a yes and. Rebecca, yes.
Just a couple of thoughts I was having, you know, I know that this is a document for anyone to step into and see, and everywhere I saw we will, it's also we are, because every single one of these things has a story behind it. As far as taking action, there is a living, breathing story. So in along the spirit of people who want to learn more and the power of stories and whatever that looks like functionality-wise would be figured out, we can link to stories of every single one of these things because they are already in play. So if people want to see, well, what does that actually look and feel like? It's a real authentic story of creating the future in action.
Yeah, that felt just remarkable to look at it and go, this is who we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have a quick.
Yes.
Twitter stream comments. Mary Schaefer had a comment a while ago, and she has since left, but I wanted to throw it into the stream. What makes them pick up the phone? We're back to Mark's comment. She calls it social capital. I trust you. Trust that we will have a reciprocal, respectful exchange. So I thought that was really wonderful. And I wanted to also do a shout out to Annette Sandberg, who popped on a moment ago. And Annette is saying, if you want to see a courageous, real conversation, listen to the CT Future Board meeting and linked to it. So thank you, Annette.
Thank you, Annette.
Thank you, Annette.
And chime in with anything that strikes you.
Can I have another go?
Oh, is that cool?
Yeah. So first of all, can I tell you something, the sort of language in here that I really like? So in the background paper, just underneath the picture on catalytic thinking, it talks about practices where we have routinely brought out the best in people. That's the sort of thing that enthuses me. Talking about how what we're doing is about bringing out the best in people, because it feels in there. I mean, I can instantly relate to it, that we want to develop a set of practices that sort of do that. So that was something there. The thing that I almost think needs tidying up a bit in the main document is that there's an awful lot in there, and some of it we're calling values, but some of what's in there, they don't actually feel like values. They feel more like behaviors. Now, maybe we're about to have a discussion about, well, values in action are behaviors, but I think it would help squash the whole thing down if you had a more tightly defined sense of these are our values. And then what followed from that is, and when you implement those values, these are the sorts of behaviors that you would expect to see.
I think my understanding as I was pulling it all together was almost entirely behavioral. It was almost entirely that there wasn't much in here that, because values for me are sort of in the heart and in the head. And what I was thinking about, I don't know if it's right or wrong or if it works or not, but what I was thinking about in this document was, what would people see? What would they experience? What would they see? It came out of the framework, out of looking at the conditions that needed to be in place for people to be at their best. What would they need to see? What would they need to feel? What would they need to experience? And what would we need to do in order to create those conditions? So what could people, that whole thing that Justin was saying before about people knowing what to expect, they're not going to know what to expect regarding a value, but they're going to know what to expect regarding a behavior. And so that's sort of where I was playing. I don't know that that's right. I don't know that that's wrong. I'm just telling you where it came from.
So I will, I will fall in line, in alignment with that, which is, I really think that the power comes from talking about valued behaviors, which I think is what you are saying when you say values in action. But I would agree is that the behaviors are the interpersonal, transactional thing between people. And I think that's part of the challenge I have with, you know, the wall full of values, is those can all exist in someone's head. And I can think I'm acting with integrity, because in my head I am, but then the actual interaction and way in which people are interacting or expressing themselves mm-hmm. doesn't feel that way. And so I actually am sort of inclined and appreciate taking a shortcut around values words and getting right at the heart of the behaviors. But I think it may be that, and I know you do this a lot, Hilde, you speak to this a lot, but maybe, and this is just a semantics thing of what's the clarity of language that people can see that says, we're talking about this in a way most people don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. we're talking about this as, again, values or behaviors we value because of the things we hold that are important to us, but that we are, and in fact, as I'm talking about this, it actually instills a little bit more of that action outcome side of it. This is an action you will see. This is an outcome you will see, is people behaving in this way. So when you are in creating the future, involved with and connecting with, one of the outcomes is experiencing these behaviors. I still go also to, hey, I'm sitting here saying people experiencing equity in their lives is an outcome that creating the future could, you know, I would love to see language very clear around that. Now, that's just me, because again, that's my vision of better. My vision of better is people are experiencing more equity, or actually I would not more equity, people are experiencing equity, period. It shouldn't be more, there isn't more or less equity. There is equity.
It's like a little pregnant. The thought that's occurring to me as you're talking, Justin, the need to be explicit and say that we're talking about this in a way that frequently doesn't happen. What has been striking to me over the past several years of looking at this at both the, because I'm in the day-to-day, but I'm also at the meta, is the degree to which, and I know, Justin, you love the fractal nature of all of this, the degree to which we are actually accomplishing, it sounds ridiculous, but we're accomplishing the mission by the actions of accomplishing the mission. That And I've not been able to be really clear. I haven't spent time to clarify words that actually make that make more sense. But what you're really talking about is that by acting in these ways, that is our mission. Our mission is to act like this. And because we said that a big part of our mission is demonstration, so it's not just teaching you how to act like this. It's a big part of our mission is that we act like this.
It's the what we were calling the living lab before, you know, in the past. It is
experiment.
We are the experiment. So look at us at the same time as you're looking at these values, because we are experimenting with these values ourselves. We are part of the outcome of this. So that to me is a real differentiator in terms of just simply having values, walking your values, and being so transparent and open and saying, look at us walking our values. Look at us doing this at every point in our interaction with the outside world and inside world, in every interaction.
You know what this makes me think of? Dean Adams, John Dewey, American Practice.
You're breaking up, Angie. Oh.
Can you hear me? Okay. This reminds me of Jane Addams, John Dewey, American Pragmatist, democracy. There are ideas of democracy in action, and you know the whole living laboratory of the settlement house. And anyway, I mean, there's this, you know, there's, I guess that's exactly what we're talking about, is what the sort of things that they were talking about.
You're stuck in your daughter's history project again.
Yeah, but it's, well, I was in Chicago recently and toured the whole house, and it's amazing to be there. But I guess it seems to me that in a way we've forgotten all that and we're rediscovering it again. And there's a lot of maybe guidance there that we could draw on, because it was the same sort of idea too, of going and living amongst, the people and understanding how they understood the world and trying to provide systems that enable people to live their lives richly and fully. So they didn't necessarily talk as much about equality, but that idea of everyone being able to, you know, live the lives that they would like to live.
Two thoughts, and I want to share something that's been going on in the chat. But one, as you're talking, Angie, is the only words going through my mind are the chants that we're hearing through all the protests, at least in the US. And all I feel like saying is, this is what democracy looks like. But there's a big piece of that. Carl, I'm smiling at the value, the chain that you created in the chat that looks at, is there a chain that moves from values to behaviors to outcomes? It is exactly the chain of causality that we use when we're teaching about catalytic thinking, that our assumptions and our beliefs, which is our values, lead to our actions, lead to our results. And so I think that's a really, really big piece of this.
So that all makes perfect sense to me, as does what Justin said afterwards, where it was Justin saying that talking about behaviors, it was almost worth starting to think about outcomes. I think then the reason that I just did that little chain thing is because I think the document needs a greater clarity about what values do you start with, then how do they map onto the behaviors that you expect to see? Because at the minute, the point I was trying to make about values and behaviors is that it all feels a bit mixed up. Maybe I just want a clarity that isn't possible, but that's how I'd try and frame it.
No, and I think that really, Carl, helps give clarity to how you were talking about the background document and this document. And it sounds like there are elements in that background document. While you don't need everything there, that it may be, you know, that list that you had, Hildy, and maybe there's a couple more things to add to that of saying, these were the things that resonated as what mattered to people in their brains and in their hearts. And from that, we have identified that these are the behaviors that really you know, come from, develop out of, and reinforce. I think those values. Because I think to Carl's point, you know, while I want to short circuit it and skip over values, the rest of the world is still at values, and we want to be able to stand shoulder to shoulder with them, and be able to help them understand how we understand values, because we have a perspective around what we think that leads people to.
There's something. Yes. First of all, yes. There's something just very, very core. I wrote down pretty much every word you said, Justin, as I was thinking about it, when you were saying that we need to say, we're talking about this in a way that people don't talk about, and to say, this is an outcome you will see. That in each of these, this is an outcome you will see. And what I'm looking as I'm mapping, okay, we show, here's the list of values, here's the actions that we will take that will uphold those values, and here's the outcome, which is consistently sort of people being at their best, because in each of these, we are talking about every single one of these actions are actions that people take at their best. And it really is, you know, it just sounds sort of kumbaya, but it is why I put it in the Pollyanna principles, and why I called it the Pollyanna principles, is that the best in humanity rocks. The best in humanity, we are awesome beings. And if we can be using systems, frameworks that and touchstones and guideposts, as you call them, Dimitri, that are consistently reminding us of this is what we look like when we're at our best. Mm-hmm. And that this isn't hard. You can do this.
You know, Hilda, you mentioned that we were at this workshop this weekend, and there was another exercise that they had done, and the exercise was presenting two identically different scenarios that could be read very differently based on your political and personal viewpoints, both of which were extremely valid to the people who believed those viewpoints.
So it's looking at one issue through two extreme viewpoints.
And, you know, there was a bit of, you know, high school, college debate or lawyers taking the other side view. Argue that side, argue both sides, believe, you know, present your thoughts basically on both sides. And one of the things I like about a little bit of the vagueness here is that it's not prescriptive, that it's not saying, and I'm sort of going back to, you know, what's the outcome? Well, the outcome could be very, very broad based on who you are and what your belief system is, that if it results in bringing out the best in others and yourself, then that, you know, in my way of looking at it, is the outcome I'm looking for. And though the specific outcome may be very different based on this worldview that you have as you come into this, because, you know, let's face it, look at the faces on this screen. We're all like white old people. And
speak for yourself.
Okay. Handsome and beautiful white old people. How's that? So, you know, these, not rules, but you know, what we're proposing here needs to be universal, and it needs to apply to people who may have a different worldview. But I think ultimately are human beings who ultimately want the same thing. We all want the same thing, you know, bottom line. So I'm not sure where the overlay is, Carl, because I understand what you're saying, but I also feel that there is an importance to having that flexibility that comes from a less prescriptive outcome. You know, that, you know, we want to, you know, it kind of reminds me sometimes when you see organizations, you know, we're doing our strategic plan and we want to have 10% more beds or food or mouths or, you know, whatever in the next 3 years. That's approaching it from a very, you know, prescriptive outcome, as opposed to we want a community that people are nourished, and we want people, a community where people don't sleep in, you know, the streets, or we want whatever. So it's more of a feeling here, but I feel that there is power in having it be more universal.
And I think that's where Carl was going, to put words in his mouth, which is the last thing you need me to do. Is open wide, honey, here it comes. Here comes the train. but when he was talking just about things will be better, and again the question of better for whom, and the question of equity, and do we want to go there, and I think that there is power in saying that people will be at their best, whatever that means to folks. But I think that I think a lot of what we're talking about here addresses that. And what we're talking about, the thing that's making me feel good as somebody who spent 3 weeks and didn't sleep a lot doing this, is that it doesn't sound like there's egregiously horrible, like this sounds like it's sort of on the path. And what it feels like we're talking about is adjustment. But that alone just feels good. So I just wanted to say that. Thank you. Carl, yes.
I just want to come back to Dimitri's point about this example of whatever the reduced number of homeless people in whatever city. What Dimitri and I think you talked about then were targets and measures. That's not the same as outcomes. For me, I see no shame in us sort of saying that actually the outcome of this is that we think people will be more involved in their communities. That's an outcome, as far as I'm concerned. A target might be 10,000 more people in Michigan are involved in their community next year. I'm not interested in that for the purposes of this. I think in the world that we live in, Hilda, you sort of talked earlier on that people want to know that they're making a difference, because if they don't think they're making a difference, it stops them from getting involved. So I think we've got to have some sort of sense of what is the outcome of having this set of values in behaving this way, because having that set of values and behaving in this way leads to this outcome. And the reason it does that is because we're responding or reacting, if that's the right word, to a set of things that we see in the world that I think, Hilda, you outline in the Pollyanna principles. So I think what I'm almost sort of saying now is that I began with values and then behaviors and then outcomes. Almost, I think what we need at the beginning are almost sort of beliefs that the world works in a certain way, and we think it can work better.
The outcome that has been at the core, and it is, you guys are absolutely right, it needs to be much more humanly defined than the word that is used. And I've used it as a placeholder because I haven't spent the time. A big chunk of my summer sabbatical is going to be writing the white paper on catalytic thinking, where I'm going to be spending time looking at what is the language we use that makes it more accessible. But when we talk about cultural systems, the Pollyanna principle that individuals will go where systems lead them, that what we're talking about is workplace systems and the systems that we routinely follow by culture every single day in our lives of how we treat each other and be with each other. And if those systems change, people will follow the system. If the questions that are asked in every place of employment, in every, you know, we had all of those discussions, which I know, Carl, you feel are irrelevant, and they're so powerful in terms of defining what the process was going to be, for instance, for employee evaluation. And what does that look like as a system rooted in bringing out the best in employees and people who are participating? That if those kinds of systems are in workplaces where the questions that they're asking are rooted in what's possible, though, that's the outcome that we're looking at, is systemic change. And with that systemic change, because people will go where systems lead them, they'll become more involved in their communities, they'll become more, and community systems will be set up so that they can be more involved, and et cetera, and et cetera. But the goal has always been that this creates systemic change in workplaces, in how we be with each other in life.
I don't disagree with any of that. The common vernacular that I have heard that described it is culture eats strategy for breakfast. And I think what you're talking about is how do we change culture? And for me, that's the sort of language. That's the sort of language that I think potentially works far better with people who are not just part of our world. I think that works better than talking about human systems. How do we change culture?
Well, and I go back to culture is a manifestation of behaviors. That's what culture is, which is why it's so important to have these articulated, because it is the consistent and replicable behavior that creates a culture. So, you know, it's not one instance that does, but it's a collective set of behaviors that people engage in. So all the more reason to talk about how behaviors are so critical to that. So I definitely agree with that, that we really focus. And there was something else I was going to say, but now I forgot what it was.
So. Mark just posted a thing to the chat about it's a link for those who are watching to Umar Haque's, I don't know if it's his blog itself. It's his blog. It seems at Medium. And while the title says why Trump was inevitable, but recovery isn't, it appears the thing that's striking me in this, Mark, is his line that what do people whose lives are getting worse do? They rip up the social contracts that are failing them.
And so, yeah, I thought about this meeting the whole time I was reading that piece, because it talked about that, and it talked about it was resonating with people go where systems lead them or where they don't get led to.
So that, well, there are two things. One is the chat that I put in there about self-efficacy. I mean, that's what it is. People rip that self-efficacy. I no longer have control, so I'm going to take control and by whatever means necessary. So I think if we think about self-efficacy as an outcome, and, you know, again, I think it needs to be laden with some sense of what we define as good. And I think that's fine. You know, I think the one thing about all of this is it can be co-opted for things that are not great. So I think we need to hold ourselves accountable and say, no, this is good and better by our definition. And this is the expectations around, we are creating spaces of, you know, whatever the words are that we use to define that, I think is really important. So this taps, you know, Mark, what you were saying taps into something, and I this might be a big giant philosophical thing that's a sidestep, but when we think about where people are and the systems and the realities that they experience, I've been coming to this sense that we are kind of in another flat earth, round earth moment, where we have so many systems of information right now, whether it's neuroscience, whether it's social science. I mean, we have all these things that are actually challenging how we assumed everything worked. We're, you know, it's the power of science. Sorry, I believe in that. And I think that there are slightly more objective realities are coming into play, and they are fundamentally challenging what everybody holds, whatever your political or philosophical. I mean, you know, it's if social science saying altruism really isn't a thing the way we understand it. What I really am starting to feel, and I'd have to read the article that Mark cited, but that's where we are, is we have all of this information now, and it's part of the reaction is I now have things that are supposedly more objective telling me that my subjective assumptions are no longer right. And some people are comfortable going in and saying, okay, that's a new reality. Let's align with that. And others are saying, I have no idea what to do. You're pulling the world out from under me. But that we have this tension, and sort of where I'm going with that is, to what degree is knowledge and understanding, and does this play into that section on learning, that there is something about how we respond, react, process, learning new constructs of reality. And again, I don't know what is objective, what is fact in that. That's part of the challenge. But I do see things around, you know, science is revealing things to us that if we don't listen to them, all we are doing is hurting ourselves as individuals. I'll stop there because that was like a big bomb.
it was a good one, and it was. I am playing with and liking the so what, which is basically the statement of our outcomes, is to what end, and in shorthand, I have played with a more humane world. But that's just my shorthand that I've played with. It doesn't necessarily have to mean anything. Justin, give me words that somebody who doesn't understand what self-efficacy is, or anybody, talk to me about self-efficacy. What's it look like? Because it's a big word.
What about the power to create your own future?
To affect change, to contribute to change.
What else? There's something in there that links to what Carl was talking about with people being more involved in their, I moved from Carl, people being more involved in their communities, to people being more involved in their own lives. Because people not being in their lives.
I'm actually not hugely convinced about this idea of empowerment. I'm not sure it's that necessarily about giving people the tools to change. I think it's actually about activating people so that they want change. I look at some of the things that are happening in the world at the minute and some of the things that are sort of happening here. Unfortunately, one of the reasons that we don't have a participation rate as high as we would want it is not because people don't know how to get involved, or certainly not this idea that people don't have the time. They do have the time. They're just choosing to do other things. They're choosing to not get involved. So some of what we're about comes back to this thing about values and about how do you activate people to get involved? They don't need scaling up. They need motivating. They need triggering.
Okay, so here's where I was going with this is I like the statement of here's the values, here's the behaviors, and the outcomes. Being in some way that things will be better, and here's what we mean when we say that. Here's our view of better. And I believe that we had an unwritten rule that we would never say the word empower. I think several years ago, I heard that in a board meeting one of the people was rejoicing at the end of the meeting that it was a rare thing to actually be in a group where they had not heard for 2 hours the word empower. And so, yeah. But I think that's it's powerful. Things will be better. And here's what we mean when we say that. You're absolutely right, Justin. Any thought framework that works can be used for good and can be used for evil. It could be used for anything because what works, works. Truth is truth. As much as somebody might want us to think that there's alternate truths. And so where I want to be mindful of time, what I'm sensing is that for the most part, if we were to post this today as is, well, it's actually posted as a draft, that it's close, that it needs some logic links in between to pull it together. And a little bit of tweaking of language. One of the things I would ask Carl, being as you guys are spending so much time on creating more human language, would you take that first document into NCVO and have a group play with it and make it more human? Have tweak on the language?
I'll tell you what I'll do in the first instance. I'll have a sit down and think about it, and I'll have a go at it. Because given that I sort of wrote the sort of the thing and helped write the thing that we just done for the election, so I'm quite happy to have a play with it.
That would be wonderful. Because my summer is all taken up, and I want to have this as done as possible, as soon as possible. Because mm-hmm. the two things I'm doing on my sabbatical, one is writing the white paper on catalytic thinking, pulling all of this stuff together and writing a white paper. But the second thing is starting to really move forward on the restructuring. And this is going to be the foundation of that. Starting to talk to anybody who has been part of any sort of structure that creates local decision-making, doing the research. I have got a bookmark file that's about this long. And so any people that you guys know that have experience or have been studying organizations that have shifted to accomplish that mission in a very, very much broader sense, I want to talk to them. And just and what I'm focused on right now is the how. What is, you know, who does what? How does stuff get done? Very, very tactical, very, very pragmatic, so that when we flip the switch, we have the how in place and know what we're flipping. Mm-hmm. So that's just an aside. But the aside is to say that the degree to which you guys can help write this, rewrite this, reframe this so that we can post it officially at the site rather than just as a blog post, it can be at the About Us. That would be really, really helpful. Justin, if you could help with that whole flow from values to behaviors to outcomes, especially playing with that. Carl, if you could play with that first document, especially making it more human. Any other thoughts that you guys have that are big? Yeah, Carl.
Hilda, just for clarification, do you want me to look at the background document or the values in action document?
Well, the one that you said had the most problem was the
yeah, the background.
If you want to take a look at the second one, I won't be in
that. I'll start with having a look at the background, and if you hate it, I'll walk away in silence and we'll leave them as they are.
Not up to me to hate it. The thing that I love about the way we're going to restructure is it's not going to be up to me to do anything. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a big us rather than anything else. So pretty wonderful. Is there anything else that really strikes you, either about the documents or about what we are talking about in general? Dimitri, are there any tweets that we should...
Annette has been chiming in the last few minutes, agreeing to many things, you know, values, actions, outcomes. She loves that. Everyone's needs met for a more benevolent outcome. Systems go where people lead them, the core tenant. It's so important. An important point, people need motivation to motivate, not empowerment. Great point. Mm. So thank you, Annette.
Thank you, Annette. I'm glad you're here.
Me too.
Anything else big for the good of the cause, big or little, for the good of the cause of what we were talking about here today before we...
Yeah, Carl mentioned something a few minutes ago. I had to step away because my earphones...
Can you speak up just a little bit, Mark?
I can. Hang on just a second here. Is that better?
A little bit. No?
Is that better?
Just go. Just speak up.
Okay. Well, Carl mentioned something a few minutes ago when he was talking about motivation. And one thing I kind of wanted to tag on to that with was that piece and why people aren't getting more involved kind of goes back to trust. Because in some cases, not in all cases, I think people stop getting involved when they don't feel, unlike none of you have ever seen this, I'm sure, they don't feel valued, or they don't feel that the volunteer time or the volunteer funds they provided with the intent of accomplishing the mission of the organization or whatever, they didn't feel those things were used effectively, used at all, or used for what they were actually going to be used for in the first place. And if that trust gets broken, trying to get those people back is incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
because I think it's a two. There's at least two tines on that fork. There's the motivation fork Carl mentioned. There's the trust tine, and I'm sure there's other things in there as well.
Very much so. Very much so.
Just keying off what you were saying, Mark, I think part of it is also the personal connection that, and that really is a lot to what trust is about. I know that one of the very base core beliefs in Creating the Future is that it's about the people. And Hilda used the example of having a tech call, which really wasn't a tech call. It was a person call. And so that person will pick up the phone when I call next time because they have experienced a person trust relationship already. And I think the kind of kidding about bots earlier and, you know, having, because it's cheaper to have, you know, an online system, you know, chat back to you, I think enforces that sort of detachment that people have, and that it takes work and energy on the part of individuals and organizations to make that personal contact with people and to listen to them as human beings and to reflect back to them what you heard about them. So that's part of what trust is. You know, yeah, I heard you, Carl. I understand what you're saying. I normalize that. All the words that we use around that, but I think that's really, really important is having that direct connection, whatever that means, whether it's in a group process or an individual. But I think that's one of the reasons why people aren't motivated to respond or to connect. I mean, it's just as easy to think of it as, gee, I was just asked by Target to give them a survey. I don't care about Target. Why should I do that? Where if I was just asked by Carl to give him a reaction to something, I'm going to take the time to think about it, and I'm going to do that. So I just wanted to kind of emphasize the importance of the human contact here with intent.
Yeah, if you have a better relationship with a company or an organization's bot than you do with their people, there's kind of a problem there.
Yeah, there was a wonderful exchange that Dimitri had, because I haven't mentioned Zoom in about an hour. Dimitri had a wonderful exchange with somebody at Zoom via their online chat. And as a company, Zoom is just doing amazing things. They're expanding and growing like crazy. And with such a stable system, we understand why, with all of the goodness that's at the heart of it. Their core value is we deliver happiness. That's their slogan. We deliver happiness. And they do. And it's fabulous. And so Dimitri was chatting with somebody to figure out some of this webinar platform that we're using here. And he said, wow, you guys have just been growing like crazy. And the person in charge of the chat, so we're talking about the lowest level tech person, because that's who they stick on the chats. That person said, yes, we're growing like crazy, but the values haven't changed any. And yeah, it just, makes your heart pitter-pat. That's a real human. So, as we wrap up this conversation, I'm truly appreciative. This has just been really, really helpful. And I'm appreciative, Justin and Carl, of you taking some of these pieces. If any of you want to help either of them with any of it, please offer and dive in. As you take a deep breath and sort of center on all that we've talked about today, which has been big and huge, if you have taken any notes today, taking a look at what you've noted and sort of circling what has stood out to you, in our conversation today? What are you feeling at the end of this conversation today? And I'd love to know from Annette as well, and anybody else watching.
I will stick to my normal script. I think it's been a fantastic conversation that I find really interesting and I enjoy as much as I ever did. It feels like we move in very small increments forward.
Did you read the part of the thing that says to go to go smooth, we go slow, and going smooth makes it fast?
Absolutely. But we are also though in the business of change, and we've got to convince other people that this is a process where the return on investment is justified. And I wonder if some people will look at this from the outside and be a little bit skeptical about how long it takes us to do some things.
Well, the joy of being a learning organization whose primary job is to learn and to share what we learn is that we are learning immensely and sharing it as we can. So thank you. And I'm just glad you're here. I'm always glad you're here. Anyone else? What is?
I spent some time.
Mark, could you speak just speak loud.
Yeah, I spent some. How's that better? There's a mic here somewhere. You know, I spent some time over the last several years working with an organization that explicitly sat down and talked about their values. And there were some problems in that discussion. But one of the values that came out of that discussion, and these were all fairly short, it was like they were like one sentence, and then there was maybe two sentences to explain them. They ended up using that value list as something to discuss during interviews with people. And if those values did not resonate with those people, then the conversation pretty much stopped at that point. But it also gave them great things to talk about in the interviews about how they use those values in their previous job, in their personal life, and things like that. When you spend 2 years talking about that, it feels like a lot of fluff. And I'll be the first one to say that I had that thought several times. But when you actually get done doing that, and you know, they're a process, they're not a thing. When you get done with the first go round and you start using them, that's when they really start to show their value. And you know, as Captain Impatient, I will say, you know, along with my partner in New York City, she's also Miss Captain Impatient or Mrs. Captain Impatient, whichever you want to call her. I found that process reflective of the conversations that I had here 5 years ago. And the conversations I had here back then strengthened that muscle to get through those conversations and see the value in them. And I think that's important to keep that in mind when you're going through this stuff, because for me, you know, I'm moving a million miles an hour in a lot of different ways, and I've got less patience than almost anybody probably, but or at least it seems that way to some people, I'm sure. But one thing that came out of that list of values that I think probably could translate to any organization was that we value commitment over ego. And when you take that into the conversation that you have, and you think about all the writing that's been done about ego in particular, and you kind of mash all that together and think about it, it really starts to change how you think about values and behaviors and the whole connection that we've been talking about for the last hour and 50 minutes. So I just want to throw that out there as, into the room and see what happens. Also, I do want to comment that Dimitri, I don't know what it is about you, but you look really freaking happy. even if you're not smiling, there's just you just do. It's pretty cool.
Thank you, Mark.
That's what I'm taking out of the meeting. I'm done.
Yeah, I don't know how to follow that. So, I think it is a little bit, you know, Mark, as you were talking about that. I mean, what popped into my mind is it doesn't matter what you care about; it's what you do. I mean, you know, because what you do, you know, if what you care about matters, it will come. It will really manifest in what you do, which I think is that commitment piece. So, which takes me back to so much of what we talked about of really thinking about behaviors. And Carl, you had mentioned something about outcomes. You know, they're not the measures and the quantities, they are the changes in state, meaning someone did something or someone feels something, or, you know, the world is healthier. That these are things. I think it's actually one of the Simon Sinek videos where he's talking about, he said, imagine if we tried to quantify love. Like, we can't quantify love, but it'd be absurd to say we don't want love and we shouldn't think about creating more love in the world. And that's, so I think that there is this interesting tension between, yes, we want to talk about behaviors and actions and feelings, but when we talk about them, we need to accept that they are intangible, or challenging, not intangible, because they are real to us. Feelings are real. happiness is real, as is quite apparent given what Mark just said. It's visible. It's, you can see it. You can. Thanks, Mark. That was that's how I follow you. But being comfortable in that, and maybe there's something in this document that speaks to that of, acknowledging, and I can look at that too, of maybe that construct of saying, we may be talking about things that feel difficult to measure, but we know in our hearts that they are things we want to see and feel. And so I think that it's reassuring to me that we are sort of, dancing along into that space. I think the other thing is I'm very excited to see where the new structure leads, because I think it actually answers some of the question that you have, Carl, which is, I think there is an element of creating the future, which is oftentimes it's the offshoots that we don't see where the transactional change is happening, and it doesn't always come back. It is the people who have touched creating the future and have created systemic change somewhere in their world. And I know, Rebecca, you've been doing, a yeoman's person's job at helping collect those stories and bring that message back in, because I do think it's there. It's just, it's a couple of degrees of separation from it. And so that's the piece. And I hear, Carl, what you're saying, and I think part of it is sometimes we don't acknowledge where that's snowballing and manifesting, and while creating the future itself as an entity might not be changing how a foundation is funding in its community, someone in LA is. And it's because of creating the future, and it's because of what they've observed, seen, experienced, even Mark, some of what you're saying of practicing the muscles, so.
Angie, how about you?
I don't have much to add, just to say, just thinking back to the discussion we had earlier about the mission being what we're doing, or the action is part of our mission, kind of speaks to what Justin was just talking about as well, that I don't feel so much this anxiety about the outcomes. I think these discussions are part of the outcomes, or they're connected to things that maybe, we're not seeing completely, but I guess the thing that I'm wondering about is the next step is how do we, considering this importance of trust and connections, how do we start to bring in other people who are not, don't look like us? And it's hard, it's not an easy thing, but it's an important thing that we need to keep working on.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that I'm so excited to be looking at this as distributed, as local, as people taking these frameworks and these ideas into what makes sense for them locally. And, as Justin said, bringing it back in, to the extent that we can, so that we can share it back out. But the thought of of it being local. Local, I talked in the document about the preference for inclusion over representation. And if you're going to be a board, you're always going to be representative. And if we're including people and having this be where they are, and they're using it the way it makes sense for them, then we don't have to have a board that represents one of these and two of those. It's part of what's exciting to me as well, Angie, so thank you for that. Yeah. Dimitri, Rebecca, what's standing out to you?
I had circled, and Justin, you talked about it again. I had circled when Justin said we're talking about this in a way most people don't talk about, and I had added on to it, yet everyone wants it. So it's us being explicit because it's what every human being wants in this world. So that part of that's the unpacking the systems and the way we've all been showing up. And I think this can be a clarion call to people getting off autopilot and start to notice how things are and to see I could create the change. And that's what we talk about in class. You don't have to be part of a hierarchical structure of a leader. Anyone can ask a different question in any setting that changes everything in the tone and culture of what follows. And when I look at the statement of our values in action, that's the values in action of each of us as a human being. So I think about what's possible with this being published in the world for people to take and make in their own in ways that we'll never know. You know, what kind of experimentation will be going on. So this also becomes an on-ramp to so many more conversations because someone will see themselves in here. Someone will be curious. And you know what we do when someone is curious? We have a conversation. It's what we're already doing. So scaling it with more and more human beings to have those conversations will be awesome because it's just a couple of us right now. So the invitation is there and it's ripe and ready.
Reflecting on a couple of things as I and some of them in recent comments, you know, Justin, you were talking about, you know, quantifying love. And I'm really thinking about how in our current society, you know, on the planet almost, we commercialize or commerce everything. And you know, we think about things that aren't, you know, like what's the ROI of my kid, you know, what, you know, or my mom or, you know, whatever, which sounds absolutely absurd. And yet we apply that to so many other things in the world. And I think that the comment, Justin, that you're making, which I think is very true, is that, you know, Creating the Future acts so much as a movement which inspires people in many places in the world to do stuff and to change the way they behave, and that isn't captured in the sense of, you know, well, it's on the spreadsheet. Look, you know, 5,000 people love Create the Future, you know, and they did the following things or whatever. And yet it's achieving the mission. So I'm kind of reflecting on that and how that interacts with all of this. And I'm also thinking about the fast, slow thing. And I'm thinking about it like creating a railroad, that if you want to get a railroad across the country, you have to lay the track. And sometimes you have to go through mountains and you got to go through valleys and you got to meet the people who are there and hopefully create relationships with the people who are there as you're building the track so that it's not a war that's going on. And eventually you get to wherever the goal is, and now that train can fly down that track because there's a track for it to go down, where it might seem like, well, you know, screw it. We'll just take the covered wagon because, you know, we'll get across country in a month, you know, we'll be there. So it's sort of thinking about it from the perspective of this is a foundational effort that can really change things in a very dramatic way.
I love the fact that we do group reflections because the reflecting off of what each other is thinking is so, so helpful. And Mark, you really triggered mine in your comment that in the years that you were on the board, your impatience with these conversations leading to building the muscles that you can have those conversations someplace else and watch the value in it and see, oh my gosh, something happens out of this. Is such a big part of why we're looking at creating that kind of cultural shift. It's exactly one of those cultural shifts, and you're getting to that, Dimitri, and what you're talking about with the speed. We, as a culture right now, value speed over a whole lot of things that are actually more productive because we do. We don't have to. And in many cases, that valuing of speed is directly counterproductive to the things we actually want to create. And yet we value action over thinking about it. We talk about failing fast rather than learning and applying. There's so much there, just in terms of our purpose in changing those systems. So I'm just really, really grateful to all of you for an amazing conversation today, for all of your brilliance and wisdom. And thank you guys all. Yes, Dimitri.
A final from Annette is that she would like to, her takeaway from the board meeting, she'd like to help share nuggets from the meeting on social media through captioned edited video. Woohoo.
Annette. We love you, Annette, a lot. wonderful. Thank you guys all so, so very much. Mark Riffey, would you stay on for just a moment? Rebecca, you can stay if you want to, but Mark, if you will stay on for just a moment. Thank you guys.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, Carl. Goodbye, Angie.
Bye.
See you both.